All right, having said all that, today we have the privilege of hearing from Amelia, who is our River Kids director. Would you please give her a welcome? Thank you.
Thank you, Charles. Good morning. My name is Amelia. I'm the Children's Program Director here at the River. Welcome. I'm glad that you're here with us on the third Sunday of Lent. Have you heard some of these terms? So I see some smiling face, so maybe some of you are familiar with these terms already. So ghosting. Ghosting is the act of disappearing without warning, or cutting off contact with someone you're dating or in a relationship with. Catfishing is the act of creating a fake online identity or persona with the intention to deceive someone into forming a romantic relationship. And then we have breadcrumbing. And that's when someone consistently checks in with a romantic prospect and keeps them interested, but never follows through with what they really want, a date or a relationship. Experts say that the fact more people are meeting online creates an abundance of options, and this can make it difficult to develop a genuine connection and can lead to some bad dating behaviors. And these behaviors can trigger a lot of anxiety. Am I not attractive enough? Have I done things differently? It's been 3 minutes and they haven't texted me back. A survey by the Pew Research Center reveals that about half of our population feels that dating has gotten harder in the last 10 years. And navigating this new social landscape and change in communication style can lead to people to question their self-worth and values. We have heard that a good quality relationship leads to a good, happy life. The Harvard study on happiness has been mentioned here a few times. It's the longest running study ever conducted on personal well-being, over 80 plus years. And the key takeaway from this study is that the quality of our closest and most intimate relationships is the biggest predictor of our happiness and well-being. And this could be romantic relationships, siblings, parent and child, and friendships. All of this relationship can be intimate and significant. Relationships are at the core of life, so they have downstream effects on everything else that we do. So when we perceive conflicts, when we sense threats, when we experience uncertainties, we become anxious. And then we ask questions such as, my relationship is not great. Does this mean I will never be happy? What if my attempts at relationship are met by unfavorable behaviors, such as presented earlier? Will I ever find someone? What if being single actually feels good? Many of you know, besides working at our wonderful church, I'm also studying part-time for marriage and family therapy. So I've been looking at relationship from both perspectives of psychology and spirituality, and I've been really enjoying that. When it comes to certain anxieties and relationship problems, many people benefit from psychotherapy. I believe that psychology can help us understand human behaviors and can give us effective solution to our problems. So if this is something you need, I want you to feel supported. I want to encourage you to find the right professionals and resources. At the same time, this does not mean that there's no spiritual groundings on some of the principles of psychology. Mental health can support faith, and vice versa. A lot of spiritual practices are good for our mental health too. So what I want to do today is to explore the key elements from both perspectives that can help us gain a better understanding of our situation and allow us to have less feelings of anxiety and hopefully more feelings of well-being. The Book of Psalms in the Bible is a collection of poems and lyrical composition. Psalms are unique because they cover a diverse range of human experiences, despite being written more than 2,000 to 3,000 years ago. Psalms continue to resonate with us in our modern lives. I know that Psalms provide comfort and encouragement for me in hard times. For example, I lift up my eyes to the mountain. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. In this passage, we see the imagery of God as a dependable guardian, the ultimate source of safety and comfort. There's an assurance of God's unwavering protection over our psalmist. This sounds like a relationship that is true and secure, now and forever. When we talk about anxiety and relationships, we have to talk about emotions, because emotions shape our experience. Emotions are signals, regulators, facilitators of our coping mechanism. Emotions can elevate us to joy or submerge us into pain. So let's see another example. But I cried to you for help, Lord. In the morning, my prayer comes before you. Why, Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? From youth, I have suffered and been close to death. I have borne your terrors and am in despair. Your wrath has swept over me. Your terrors have destroyed me. All day long, they surround me like a flood. They have completely engulfed me. You have taken from me friend and neighbor. Darkness is my closest friend. What happens here? Are we still talking about the same God? Where did the comfort and assurance go? In this passage, we hear a tone of anxiety and despair. In fact, Psalm 88 as a whole is a desperate cry for help. The psalmist felt abandoned by God. It's as if his soul was cut off from the presence of God. The imagery here is quite vivid, like waves of wrath completely engulfing and trapping our psalmist in darkness. So if we read Psalms literally or in short fragments, we would have a confusing and conflicting image of God, because our emotions can create a vivid picture and convincing narrative. One day we can be in love, feeling confident and secure in our relationship, and another day we may feel anxious and in despair. And although all of our feelings are true and valid, they are not always factual or reliable. And these are two very different things. For example, this is actually a very common situation. One partner may feel the house is too cold, and the other partner feels the house is too warm. Both experiences are valid, and they're likely being truthful to their experiences, right? But there's only one house and one thermostat. Or when I feel good, I love doing chores and cleaning the house. But when I don't feel so good, I complain and I blame everybody for not helping me. When we experience positive emotions, such as joy and gratitude, this expands our awareness, promotes creativity, and facilitates problem solving. Whereas negative emotions, such as fear, anxiety, and sadness, can narrow our attentional focus and lead to hypervigilance and defensiveness. When we have repeated experiences of stress and trauma, it can lead to structural changes in the brain and affects the way we perceive events and also behave. Many factors contribute to this emergence of our emotions, such as our biological makeup, our attachment styles with our parents, our psychosocial developments, our culture and environment. And much of this is really beyond our control. By understanding the role of emotions in the relationship and observing them, can help us see the bigger picture and give us valuable insights about ourselves and our relationships. And when we increase our ability to regulate our emotions, we can reduce some of our anxiety and make our way towards well-being. In the Bible, we have heard stories about when Jesus criticizes the prideful religious leaders, the Pharisees, the scribes. Jesus condemns those who exploit the vulnerable and the marginalized, and those who are self-righteous. However, Jesus never criticizes us for being too emotional. Jesus, when he came to this world, he did not just embrace our physical form, but he also took on an entire bag of human emotions. He fully embraced them because emotions are how we relate with one another. And the right kind of emotions, even anxiety, with appropriate timing and intensity, can lead to much needed outcomes. For example, Jesus got very angry at the money changers in the temple, and this called for a deeper and more authentic relationship with God. Jesus wept upon seeing the grief of Lazarus' sisters and friends, illustrating his understanding of pain and sorrow associated with loss. Jesus was moved by compassion for people who were hungry and fed them, who were sick and healed them. In one of his sermons, Charles mentioned that Jesus did not die for our sins. Jesus died for us. The passion of Christ, the rejection, the betrayal, the suffering, and the crucifixion is not a requirement for the forgiveness of sin. Jesus is here to affirm us, validate our experiences, joining our humanity. Jesus shows us our worth, our value. On the cross, Jesus cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Which is a quotation from Psalm 22. By quoting this psalm, Jesus was not indicating that God had abandoned him, but rather he was expressing the depth of his human experience and trust in God's ultimate deliverance. Sometimes we too may feel abandoned or rejected, but we know that there's not a time when God was never with us. When one of his disciples, Philip, asked Jesus to show God to them, this is what Jesus said. "Don't you know me, Philip? Even after I have been among you with such a long time, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, 'Show us the Father'? Don't you believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me?" Another similar verse, "No one has ever seen God. But if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. This is how we know that we live in him, and he is in us. He has given us of his Spirit." A couple months ago, one of my children, I can't tell you which one, was going through a really hard time and said some really mean things. This child was upset about something that was necessarily related to me, but I was there. I was aware that the anger was falsely projected and that it was unfair, but still, it felt hurtful. In fact, it was one of those rare moments where I felt like I failed. I failed as a mother. So I shared with one of my good friends, and she said, "Amelia, do you realize that for this child to say this thing to you, to be completely honest with all his feelings, means that this child trusts you? This child knows that this was not your doing. This child knows that no matter what, you would still love them. You would still be there for them tomorrow, despite what he might say today. And maybe your role at this time is to hold space for this child. It sucks, I know. But maybe this is what this child needs from you at this time." And I thought, there's some truth to that. And yes, my friend is very wise. Now, our children, our parents, our significant others, all our loved ones, can give us some sense of worth and significance. But there are limits to their ability and capacity. When my child was upset, it hurt me. It triggered my insecurities. When a lover leaves, when a parent dies, when a best friend moves away, all of this can significantly affect our sense of worth. The disappointment that we feel when our dreams fall apart, the despair that creeps in when you realize your relationship is not where you want it to be, the betrayal, the rejection, the feeling of abandonment, maybe feeling being trapped, loneliness, and darkness. These are real parts of our human experience, and Jesus too. And you know, God is not offended by any of this. God makes space and holds this space for us. So when we can be vulnerable in our prayers, when we can pour out all the good and ugly things, and know that we're not being manipulated or used or judged or evaluated, but fully accepted and embraced. This is quality relationship. And through experiences like this, over time, healing may come. We may begin to feel connected again and know that we matter. Everything about us matter to God. And this is why when a relationship feels hard, a common advice is to focus on ourselves. Self-love, probably heard this a lot. Psychology and spirituality seem to merge when it comes to this concept that a relationship which yourself is the relationship that you will always have. And it will be replicated in all other relationships. Love your neighbor as yourself. We've all heard it. In Psalm, we see a wide range of spectrums of human emotions and experiences. And like ordinary water, they come and they go. But one thing remains consistent in all of the Psalms. Whether they're experiencing joy or despair, the psalmist is never alone. Psalms always feel like a conversation between I and God. Some may call it between the false self and the true self. Cynthia Bourgeau, an Episcopal priest and writer, said, "Beginning in infancy, each of us, in response to perceived threats to our well-being, develops a false sense, a set of protective behaviors driven at root by a sense of need and lack. While the true self is not something we create, it is our deepest essence, our connection to the divine, and our source of love and wisdom, waiting to be recognized and lived into." And this is where I believe the limit of psychology lies, and the advantage of agape, or the unconditional love of God, and how agape can make a difference in the lives of those who embrace it. Agape acknowledges that there is a deeper, bigger I. The I that has always been there before we were born, before we develop our attachment styles, our protective and defensive behaviors, and we can choose to live into this I, this true self, the God in us. We can choose to behave from this more secure, more conscious, more grounded and connected place in all of our relationships. Agape moves us beyond our psychological processes and gives us roots for who we are. And who we are is beloved, unconditionally loved and worthy. Now, there are times when we may slip down back to being anxious. And this will happen more than a few times. But with agape, we can be less self-referential. We have a home base. So with agape, self-love is more than just self-care or indulging in temporary pleasures. Rather, it's about rendering grace and compassion to ourselves, especially when we feel like we failed or rejected. With agape, self-love is not about seeking outside validation or achieving perfection. Rather, it's about being content with the love that's already inside of us. And it's about a journey to continuously and consciously nurture a healthy narrative about ourselves and others. And self-love leads to two practical suggestions for today. The first one is try the spiritual practice of examine. The examine is a daily self-examination, a prayer developed by Inigo Lopez de Loyola, or better known as Saint Ignatius, the 16th century founder of the Jesuits. In the examined, we review the day, paying attention where life increase or decrease in us. In what areas we are living out of our true self or our false self. It's a wonderful practice of growing in self-awareness and noticing the presence of God in us and in all of our situations. You'll find a more detailed explanation in your 40 Days of Faith guide for this week. So I encourage you to check it out and engage with it. Second is change the emotions around the issue. In couples therapy, there's a therapeutic approach called the emotional focus therapy, or EFT. When we can observe emotions, we can identify the patterns that contribute to distress in our relationships. The goal of EFT is to help couples restructure and reshape their interactions with each other by changing the emotions of their interaction, so they can break free from their negative patterns and improve their relationship. But the same principle can be applied to other types of relationships, even individuals. When we can change our emotions about a situation, it can reduce our anxiety. And when we have more clarity, we will make better responses. We may not be able to control all the emotions that get triggered, but we can learn to shift through the emotion that we want to feel and detach from the unhelpful emotions. We can decide how long these emotions stay with us and what to do with them. Maybe do activities that trigger more desirable emotions too. The goal is to build constructive coping behaviors that can effectively address the underlying causes of anxiety and promote long-term emotional well-being. When it comes to personal development, things are easier said than done. I know, because I'm still working with this too. But here are some questions that may help facilitate the transition. What am I feeling right now? How does this emotion affect my behavior? What the underlying needs are driving this emotion? What would I like to feel instead? What support do I need from others to navigate this emotion? Now, I cannot help you find your ideal partner if this is what you desire. I cannot help you create your ideal relationships either. But if we can practice holding space for each other, and we can learn to love better together, and all of that we do is worthwhile. After all, this is why we have church. So let me leave you with a quote by a more contemporary poet. Oscar Wilde said, "To love oneself is the beginning of a lifelong romance." May all of our relationships reflect God's unconditional love and bring lasting joy and harmony into our lives. Thank you.